Bonjour. Beba Weiwetung and Dishinikas. Shaganashimoin Donald L. Chosa. Zagakwantago in Iniwag Ishkonigan in Dunjaba. Onao Oshki Debajamoinug. Minwa Adzukanug. Gi Debajamoag. Ojibwe Debajamo in Iniwag. Miigwech Bisindao. Gi Debajamoad. Hello, my name is Wolves Howling All Around You, or Donald Chosa. I'm from the Boys Fort Reservation. These are some contemporary and traditional Anishinaabeg stories told by Ojibwe storytellers.
One of the ones is I remember hearing my grandpa telling me stories about the hairy men that live out at that island, Spirit Island. Somebody went out and they were setting nets. Somebody seen somebody out there, two people out there in a canoe, taking the stuff from the people's nets that they set. So they got in a canoe to try and chase them down. They went in, they chased them out to Spirit Island. And on the north side of Spirit Island, if you've ever been out there, the rock is split. It's kind of like there's like a big gorge like out there. When you get out there, you'll see it. She said that when they chased them things, the hairy men, went in that rock. Like it opened up, a doorway opened up, and they went in there. She said, then the ones that were chasing them tried to do the same thing. And they hit the rocks. And they said the ones that were chasing them could hear them inside the rocks laughing and talking in the Indian language, saying that they thought they could do that too, basically. They thought they could do that. Years ago, probably like maybe 2000, 2001, when I was into running, really into jogging and running, I was coming back around a lake, running around a lakeshore here, got over by Girls Landing. I was getting closer more towards Albert's Landing. And I thought it was sweat getting in my eyes. And I seen one of those things, those hairy men. And he was crouched down like this, and he was looking out towards the lake. And I remember seeing his leg. It must have been at least probably that long, meaning that it was tall. I remember wiping the sweat from my eyes. I thought I was seeing things. I remember wiping the sweat away, and I looked, and I got closer. And when I started getting closer, when I was running, he turned and looked at me, and his face was hairy, and he had a like a little, you know how a dog's nose looks? It's black and it's kind of like wet-like. That's how that thing's nose looked. And when I got closer, it disappeared. I went seeing Gian right away, and I told him what I saw. And he told me, he said, "Well, go put a dish there." Well, you see, I put some tobacco down and put a dish there. So that's what I did. And since then, I have not seen that spirit, that being, whatever that is. Another one, too, is when my grandmother, she said she was a young girl. She had an older sister. And if I can remember correctly, her older sister's name was Sadie. They used to have a boarding school over in on Vermilion. They took her sister, Sadie, over there and placed her in a boarding school. Somehow, word got back to my grandmother, her dad, that they're coming to get my grandma Jessie. She was a little young girl, like maybe younger than these little girls here. They're coming back to get her. My grandmother said her dad took her out to Big Island and hid her out there for 4 nights and 4 days. And he, he'd go out and check on her, though. He'd always go out and check on her. And she said that, she remembers she was really scared. Being so small like that, being so young, being out there, left out there on a big island. Her sister wasn't as fortunate as she was, because she had to go through the pain and suffering of going through the boarding school. And where I'm going with that is that we as Indian people, look where we're at. language, you know, we're my Auntie Karen, I'm attending that class, you know, trying to bring the language back, trying to hang on to the language. You know, back then, before the Europeans came here, there was only one type of Indian, traditional. We didn't have last names like Drift. We didn't have first names like Shane. We didn't have blood quantums. We didn't have enrollments. We didn't have allotments. We didn't have this to disenroll you, disenrollment. We didn't have that type of stuff here. That was forced upon us. That was given to us, forced upon us by the dominant society. What we had back then, as I understand it, listening to my grandmother, is that we had a shaming tradition. And that was where if a person did something bad enough, the elders or the clan or the band could shame that person. And if that didn't work, then they could banish them. And banish them for like maybe four seasons, which would be a 1 year or more. But they wouldn't banish them indefinitely. It's good that, you know, I feel good that we're doing it. You know, like we're trying to preserve all these stories, these teachings. Because someday, you know, our kids are going to say, well, why don't you tell me this story? Why don't you tell me that story? How did we come to live here in that lake, Boys Fort? Now, I remember Ken told me that story about the war over by Guinea Hill. My grandmother used to tell me the stories about the Sioux battles. I remember hearing that as a young boy. You know, and the story about the flood. Billy touched on that. I remember my grandmother telling me about the story about that. It was they were on a turtle after the flood happened. And they were trying to get one of the animals to go down and go get some dirt to bring it back up so they could make land again. But the animals tried. They said the duck tried. A duck tried, and he couldn't get all the way down to the bottom. Came back up, empty-handed, basically. The muskrat, I do believe, was the one that went down. They said the animals waited for a long time. That muskrat was gone. He dove, and then finally, when he came back up, he was dead. But they opened up his little hand. And he had dirt in his little hand. And that's how the land was basically, as I remember, if I can remember that correctly, that's how the land came back. That's how we got the land back. And that's my understanding of the flood story. Now, another one, too, is regarding the drift drum. Now, this teaching comes from Rosemary Behrens, is that we must pass on the stories behind the drum. How it came to be here. How I got the drift drum, how I became the keeper of it, was that back in the late 80s, and we had some unfortunate violence happen here. And the keeper of it was one of my cousins, and she ended up going away, and it was determined that my grandmother, Margaret Jessie Drift, would be the keeper of that drum. But before that actually happened, before it was actually passed over to her, I remember that the house, I think it's where Kurt Goodsky lives now, that house, there was eagle feathers, there's an eagle bustle in there, a fan, the drift drum, and somebody tried to burn that house down. I remember that morning, it was like, I don't know, 5 o'clock that morning. I remember sitting there, I was watching TV. I remember seeing a little girl come running by, and I looked up. And it was my cousin Farah. And I went over there and I opened up the door, you know, and I could tell she was just, you know, she was just wild-eyed. And she said, "Dance house is on fire." So I got on my shoes and stuff. I went running over there. How the house sits like this. Front door is right here. The back door back here in the back bedroom is where the fire was started. I remember Jerome and Clara were there. My Auntie Karen and my Uncle Lester were there. And then I come running in, and I looked up, and I remember seeing that the flames in that bedroom. I don't know what came over me, how I knew what to do, but I went running around back around the corner of the house, turned on the water spigot, turned it on, And I grabbed the garden hose, went running back over. I remember throwing that window, or tearing off that screen, throwing that window open, climbing up on top of a tire, and I started squirting water in there. And to me, I think it was a spirit or spirits, or maybe the spirit of that drum, that directed me to do that. Because I was able to save the drum, and I think it was the bustle, I think, that was saved, but I think the eagle fan wasn't. It was scorched, and also saved the house. So then they determined that the drum should go to my grandma, Margaret Drift. She became the keeper of the drum, the Drift drum. Then after she passed away in 1999, May of 1999, I didn't want to be the keeper of that drum. I tried to give it. I wanted either my Uncle Lester or my Auntie Myra to be the keeper of it because I didn't want to keep it. It's like I knew that was a big responsibility. And they both said, no, it should stay with you. So that's how I became the keeper of it. And the songs to that, to the Drift drum is Ogichita Awiya Anishka Ingujabushka Agama King Bimoseya. What that means is how it was explained to me is that I'm going to be walking around overseas, but not for nothing. The song was part of a special ceremony for people going into the service and going off to war. And everybody that went through that ceremony and heard that song, as I understand it, came back alive. So I just wanted to share that and make sure that's recorded and passed on. I do tell my kids this story, you know, but I just want other people to know that just because it's the Drift drum and I'm the keeper of it doesn't mean that it's mine. It belongs to this community. Mio, miigwech.
What is your name and where are you from?
My name is Shane and I'm from Net Lake.
What originally got you into storytelling?
I was raised by my grandmother. And I used to remember her telling me stories. And sometimes she'd only tell me certain stories during the wintertime when the ground was frozen. And some of them stories, you know, they just stuck with me. And, you know, they have different meanings to different people. You know, it could mean one thing for me, and it could have a different meaning for you or anybody else. You know, it doesn't have just one meaning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you view as, like, the significance of storytelling in Anishinaabe culture?
To me, storytelling, what it does for me, it's family time. It's also keeping up with the tradition of storytelling and carrying on that tradition. And also, you know, like I said, they have various teachings and meanings within that story. And then, you know, when it's passed down, that it's passed down from one generation to the next. And then it kind of opens up like different teachings and different meanings for other generations behind us. And to me, it's just part of who we are as Indian people. It needs to be carried on, and it should be carried on. And, you know, I've been telling my kids various stories from Net Lake, to the animals, to even some from our own family, the Strongs are descendants from the John Bear Grease, stuff like that.
Okay, like the stories that you tell, the stories that you share, where do they come from?
Mostly, my stories came from my grandmother, and them stories came from her her mother, and then her grandmother. So she carried on that tradition, so they just kept getting handed down. One story I can remember offhand that pops into my mind right now is that a story of a woman, young woman that was kidnapped by, I do believe it was Eskimos, that came down so far down this way that they took her back, or the woman from here, our reservation, a long time ago, and took her way back up where they came from. And she escaped, but she made her way back to the people here at Boyce Fort. And it took her almost 2 years. I think it took her a while to get back here, but she found her way back here. And it turns out that same story that my grandmother told me, that's one of Donald Chosa's family members from a long time ago. So he had that same story.
Oh, okay. And would you say, like, could anybody be a storyteller? Just anybody?
To me, you know, if you're given a story, You know, that to me, once you're given a story by an elder or anybody, a storyteller, you go give them tobacco and say thank you, you know, for giving me that story and the teachings that come along with that story. Because they're giving you that story for a reason. And the teachings that come out of that story are for you. Then in turn, my interpretation of that is that once you are told a story, then you become a keeper of that story. So then it's your responsibility to turn around and pass it on to somebody else. So yeah, once you're given a story, a person can become a storyteller. And they can, you know, if they're directed to only tell it at a certain time, certain season, you know, to be respectful of that and follow that tradition. Like if they can only tell a story during the wintertime, then that's when they would only tell that story.
Okay, and is there anything else that you'd like to add today about the importance of storytelling?
Storytelling, you know, we get them. People are going to start getting them through dreams, stories that need to be passed on and revived. You know, they're going to be start giving it through dreams and visions or whatever. People are going to start telling them and what they mean. You know, if you don't know what they mean, you know, the one that's giving a story, but through a dream or a vision, you know, put your tobacco and ask. You know, look at one, you know, search for the reasons why you were given that story, when you can tell that story. You know, put your tobacco out, make your offerings. So there's old traditional stories, you know, and now there's even some now time stories. As an example, one of the now time stories that I have came from my gift of writing. And it's a story called Sad Evil. And basically his story is about a young brave who had the ability to shapeshift. And that is part of our history as Indian people here on Boys Fort, is that a lot of these people don't know that we do have that ability. We did have that ability at one time as a people to shapeshift. The story came from, there's a story about a young man that was captured by Sioux warriors, I do believe it was. And they had him staked to the ground, and when they captured him, and he turned himself into a dog, and he was trying to get away, and the Sioux people at that time realized what was going on, so they started to chase that dog, but he ended up, the individual ended up getting away. And I'm going back to my other point about Sad Evil, is that that's a now time story that I'll be sharing later on, you know, and I'm just grateful for that, you know, that my gift of writing and then being able to see the stories and the meanings and the significance behind them and the teachings that they brought out in me. You know, the Sad Evil story, for me, we need to, as Indian people, we need to govern our passions, our desires, you know, our own negativities that we have, you know, and like a simple story of maybe it's one page long has significance. You know, as an example, I have it hanging up by my office or by my desk. It's a story of a Native man and a non-Native guy gathering crabs on a beach. And Indian guy's crabs keep getting out it's the white guy's crabs keep getting out and crawling out all over out of the bucket. And the white guy notices the Indian crabs stay in the bucket. So the white guy asks the Indian, he says, I'm going to come here, crabs, stay in the bucket while mine get out and crawl out, you know, when I'm gathering other crabs. And the Indian guy says, well, them are Indian crabs. And you know, the Indian kind of laughs and then goes about his business gathering other crabs. And the white guy kind of gets curious. So he goes over and looks at the Indian in the Indian's bucket, you know, kind of half expecting to see the crabs wearing war paint and feathers. But, you know, he looks at the crabs are exactly the same as his. And he says, excuse me, he says, but your crabs look exactly the same as my crabs. How can your crabs be Indian crabs? And the Indian guy says, well, when one of the crabs try to climb up out of the bucket, all the other crabs reach up and pull the other crab back down. You know, when I heard that story, and that was given to me by an elder, when I heard that, I kind of laughed. And that elder just sat there looking at me. And then I sat there and I kept thinking, I said, that's not humorous at all. That's sad. Because look at one point, as Indian people, we weren't like that. You know, how people reach up and pull other people down is by their own negativity, selfishness, hatred, jealousy, anger, grudges. You know, grudges that, you know, there's family grudges that, you know, against my family, or my family may have against other people, other families. And it's like, you know, that was before my time, you know. It's like, and I don't understand that. I really don't. But getting back to that story, you know, I started looking at that more, thinking about it more. You know, and it's like, am I going to be the type of person that's going to reach up and try to pull somebody down? Or am I going to be the type of person just sit by and watch and do nothing? Or am I going to be the type of person that's going to try to reach down and help somebody up? And that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to reach down and help people up. You know, and I'm thankful for that story that Elder gave me about the crabs. And, you know, that's a good story. I've shared that with various people. And, you know, and they liked it. And they continued to carry it on and tell other people about it.
And so do you think that maybe through stories we can work out some of our differences, some of our problems? Is that possible, do you think, through stories?
Yes, yes. You know, with our stories, you know, the teachings behind it, the meanings behind it, our interpretations, you know, that, hey, this is what it means. Oh, yeah, you know, to be respectful of each other and say, yeah, you know, it could dissolve some of our differences, you know, maybe heal some old wounds, you know, that there's family grudges that have been carried on that have, you know, it's like, okay, if it happened 40 years ago, 50 years ago, why are you still carrying it on? You know, it's like, doesn't make sense. You know, at one time, you know, we all didn't have the last names that we do have now. We didn't have, you know, the last name of Drift or whatever. We didn't have, you know, blood quantums and stuff. At one time, we were just Indian people living in harmony or trying to live in harmony. You know, and the stories from the boarding school, those need to be passed on too. And those stories need to be told, you know, what happened at the boarding schools. You know, the philosophy behind the boarding school was to kill the man or to kill the Indian and save the man, to kill the Indian and save the man. And what that meant was to kill the traditional way out of the Indian. And to a certain point, they have succeeded with that philosophy, with that mindset. Is that, you know, nowadays we have four types of Indians: traditional, church, and church can be symbolic of other ways, and the other one is church and traditional, or one native that doesn't follow anyway. You know, and you know, that's just the truth. You know, it's right there in front of us. We see it every day. You know, we have some Indians that follow the traditional way, we have some Indians that follow the church way, we have some Indians that follow both ways, and we have some Indians that don't follow anyway. You know, and we never had blood quantums. We never had allotments. We never had ownership of parcels of land. We never had that. That was forced upon us. You know, one thing I noticed that reading on the internet, you know, you hear about people being disenrolled from this reservation or that reservation. And traditionally speaking, we never had enrollments. That came from the colonizers back then. We never had enrollments, disenrollments. Traditionally speaking, we had the shaming tradition, where that was to correct a person's behavior. And if that didn't work, then they would go to banishment. They wouldn't banish them forever. They'd banish them for maybe like four seasons, maybe eight seasons. That'd be 2 years, you know, and that was to try and correct the individual's behavior. You know, so I just like, you know, share that.
That's awesome. Well, I really want to thank you for doing this interview for us. And it's been really a good interview. And enlightening and kind of eye-opening about certain things. And like, we have this storytelling event coming up this Saturday at the Heritage Center over there in Tower, Lake Vermilion. Any last words on how you see, like, such an event, how that's beneficial to the people, like a storytelling event that is about to take place this Saturday?
Yes, no, that's a great thing that KBFT and the grant that they have to do this, you know, because it's preserved. It's kind of bringing the people back to the traditional way. You know, how they say we're losing the language. Me, I look at it from the other way. We're not losing the language. The language is losing us. There's a difference there. And but now we're having classes, you know, that was offered. And I'm grateful to the Tribal Council for allowing that to happen, you know, that we do have Karen Drift and Donald Chosa teaching the class down there. And I've been going to that class and trying to learn what I can, when I can, you know, when I'm not so busy. And getting back to the event, you know, the KBFT storytelling event, you know, that's good that what the radio station is doing, what we as KBFT are doing regarding the language, the culture, the storytellings, the traditions, the teachings, you know, that needs to be done. And we at KBFT, you know, we're doing that. And it's just like, wow. So all I can say is, you know, it's just wow. Awesome.
Yes, it is awesome. And I just want to thank you, Shane, for this interview, and I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and your sharing. I'll close with that.
Yep.
Miigwech.
The NetLink Storytelling Project is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Miigwech for listening to our stories.